Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for the Coach K and Joe Show. The Coach K and Joe Show is brought to you by Idea Fusion Media, Hubler and Sons of Jasper and Vincennes, Harmon Dental Care, and by Jasper Today. Now, here's Joe Milligan and Ken Coach K Schultheis.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Coach K and Joe Show. I'm Joe Milligan, and I'm joined every week by the coach, Coach K, Ken Schultheis. Coach, doesn't feel like fall yet, but fall sports getting ready to start. Big news in the world of Major League Baseball. Plenty to talk to you about again. Are you ready?
Yes, I'm always ready. A ton of stuff, and you know, with football scrimmages around the state of Indiana, high school football scrimmages are starting to take place, a lot of them tonight. Joe, we've had that, like you mentioned, we had that kind of fall weather. You know, we're not in the 60s. Well, we are at night. We're not in the 60s during the day, but we've had that wonderful low humidity, 70 degrees, 75 degrees here in southern part of Indiana where our show is broadcast out of. It's been pretty wonderful, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's been a great summer as far as weather goes. Unlike a couple summers when it was just miserable every day, and you know you've actually had to mow the grass all year this year.
Yeah, you know what's really interesting about what you just said. I can remember the last three or four summers, especially down here in the armpit of southern Indiana here in the Evansville area, where the humidity, being around the river, the low areas, the humidity's terrible. I can remember you would get up and you would walk outside in late July, all of August, and you would immediately begin to sweat. I mean, you didn't have to do anything, an immediate sweat. So thank you, weather gods, and bringing in some nice low humidity, cool weather as we go through August. Kids are going back to school. I know, Joe, your kids are in high school and middle school. You've got a daughter who's graduated and out in the workforce. But I've got to take my middle child back to college. Next week we'll be traveling up to Bloomington to get her started. Paige is wants to be pre-med, and she's going to be a sophomore, and she is also in a sorority. Her mom loves that because her mom was a Chi Omega and Paige is a Delta Gamma. I was not a Greek type guy, a fraternity type guy. I was a gosh dang independent, as they might call it.
GDI.
And still,
GDI.
Yeah, and still pretty independent. But next week we take her back, and I'll tell you what, I'm going to be sad, Joe, as we go back because it was great having her here this summer. She's a great kid and a hard worker, and I know how you feel as your daughter left, well, Marshall, and then down to Florida, and now in Miami, I guess, and it's tough when they go away.
Yeah, it's really tough when you have them at home. I mean, you know, the first day of school this year, I realized, you know, we're going to blink our eyes, and, you know, Reed's going to be done. You know, and we had the dilemma too that, you know, Ryan asked, you know, moving Reed downstairs to a bedroom and upstairs, there's two bedrooms that one bedroom not really being used because of Ryan, and Reese wants to move in there, and Ryan wasn't happy because that's her bedroom. So I don't know what we're going to do.
Well, Josh, when Josh came home a few weeks ago, we had converted his bedroom into a Josh/guest suite, and he walked in and he said, "Dad, this looks more like a hotel room. I guess that means I'm supposed to leave after a couple days." I said, "No, Josh, this is still your room, but we've got to. You're not going to be here that often." So we made the conversion. It's just part of the process. I always tell my kids the story, Joe. You know, I come from a big family, 9 kids, and as a couple of us would move on to college and get towards the end of our college, my mom, who's in heaven now, my mom would convert the room into something else. So when you came home, you knew that your time at the Schulteis house on 9th and Jackson in Jasper, Indiana, was limited, that you were expected to visit, but you probably weren't going to stay, and that's what going to college was all about, go out and start your own life. So we all understand that well. I guess we are the Coach K and Joe Show. We are all about sports and always a little bit more, depending on what's going on. And I would be remiss if I did not mention the passing of Robin Williams. Joe and I, of course, grew up during the Mork and Mindy days, Nanu Nanu, all the great movies he had. It is unfortunate that as we are learning more about the Parkinson's diagnosis, the deep depression he suffered, those types of things. And folks, we can't, unless we go through it, we just can't understand what people experience. I do not pass any judgment on him. That's not my place. That's the good Lord's above. I just feel sorry that he did not feel better about things in his life. And if you're out there and you battle depression, if you battle difficulties, please don't hide it. Talk to somebody. Go get help. But, Joe, we lost somebody that was part of our life growing up, and it seems like as we go on, and he was far too young at 63, but as we get a little bit older and we get into our 50s, a lot of the people that shaped our young lives growing up, they're leaving us.
And, you know, it just goes to show, I know we're talking sports, but we're just going to talk about life here for a second, you know, that you see someone and you see that, you know, how successful they've been. You know, we all have our own, we're all dealing with our own issues. And, you know, just because you think that someone's got life by the butt, not using any better term, you know, everyone's dealing with something, and, you know, don't be afraid to ask for help if you need it.
Absolutely, and you should never be ashamed, and no one should make you feel ashamed, because it's not just depression. There's other issues that people deal with internally, both physical, both emotional. And folks, Joe said it best, believe it or not, success doesn't give you happiness. It does create opportunity for you in your life and for others around you if you're willing to share it, but it does not give you happiness. That's a whole different ball of wax, from rich to poor, middle class, upper middle class. It doesn't discriminate from the standpoint of mental illness and those types of things. So we'll get off that, but we do pass along our condolences. Also, a difficult week in NASCAR. NASCAR is coming out with a new rule that says people are not to get out of their car. Joe, I don't know why you have to make this rule. It seems like common sense to me. Cars are running around the track, whether they're going 30 miles an hour or 130 miles an hour or 200 miles an hour. I understand the competitiveness. I understand that it's a part of it. Get out, point at that driver, hit your helmet on their car. Do that. You put yourself at risk. Obviously, I'm talking about the sad passing of a dirt track racer just in the prime, not even in the prime, 20 years old, Kevin Ward Jr. He was hit by NASCAR great Tony Stewart on a dirt track race, something that Tony Stewart loves to do when he's not racing in the Sprint Cup Series. He goes back to his roots. He goes back to the dirt tracks. They're short tracks. If you've ever seen them, the cars are running around there, almost midget-type cars. He was hit by Tony Stewart after they had hit Tony had run his vehicle into the wall, and as Tony came back around on the short track, Kevin Ward jumped out. People are saying Tony accelerated. It caused his car to swerve and hit young Kevin Ward and shot him out and killed him. And this is hard for everybody because we don't know exactly what was in the mind of Tony Stewart. We don't know if it was just male bravado and that car took a little spin and Kevin Ward was just too close. But either way, it's a tragedy. It's a difficulty. Tony Stewart will not race for the second straight week. And people have to remember, we've lost a person. Tony Stewart's got to deal with it emotionally. Tony Stewart owns his own racing team. He's got employees. This has effects on a family of a young man that was killed. on racing in general, on Tony Stewart and his future. Joe, just a real tragedy.
Well, you know, it, and it's something that Tony's going to have to deal with. You know, it's something he's going to have to soul search about, and you know, so, you know, and it's going to be something that's going to affect him the rest of his life. You know, there's been speculation that he might retire over this. I don't know if he will or not, as far as being a racer, but you know, it's something that's going to be life changing for him.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. So we pass our condolences out to Kevin Ward Jr.'s family, only 20 or 21, I believe, and hopefully Tony Stewart can search a little bit and people can work with him. And we just talked about emotional or mental illness. Now he's dealing with that stress, and we're just sad for everybody. There's no need to point the finger. It's difficult for everybody. A couple other things going on. Paul George. Now, folks, I'm just going to throw this out at you. And, Joe, hear me out before you jump on my case. I'm just going to throw this out at you. If you go on the Coach K and Joe Show Facebook page, you'll see a picture. I think it's on Twitter as well, on our Twitter feed, Coach K and Joe. Go on there. You will see my shooting shirt from my junior year in high school. You will notice the S is off the first part of the name and the I is missing. But junior year, 1980, go back and look, the number on the back of that shooting shirt. If you look, you will see it is the number 13. My question, and some of you may know where I'm going with this, did the Pacers, Paul George, who unfortunately will be out all of next season, and we'll talk about that as we go on in the show, he is switching his number to number 13. Listen, folks, I've been criticized. I think Jim Skillman, a few other people have criticized me for having the number 13. Paul George is now wearing number 13. Can I stretch this enough to say, did Paul George know that I wore number 13 as a junior and he wanted to pay homage to that number? So Paul George becomes PG-13, Paul George number 13, Coach K, Ken Schulteis, number 13. Just possible that Paul George did that for me, Joe?
Yeah.
Are you trying to be nice here, Joe?
Yeah, I'm trying to be nice.
All right. Well, Joe has no comment, so I'm going to go on from there. But if you think it's possible, give us a tweet or a Facebook message. Text us. You can also text us at 812-480-9449. You can also call the show 773-897-6325. A couple of other things. And, Joe, I know you've got comments on this because your kids have played, and we just enjoy watching it. The Little League World Series has started. I watched a couple of games, not all of them, caught a couple of them yesterday. Nevada drilled South Dakota. I saw a little bit of, I think it was Seoul, South Korea, and Croatia maybe. But probably one of the more interesting stories, Joe, and I don't know how much you've seen on this, I think the team out of Massachusetts possibly, or Pennsylvania, I can't remember, Monet Davis, a girl, female, sure, for that team, got him into the World Series, throws a 70-mile-an-hour pitch, has great-looking pitching form, Joe. Little League World Series is always full of fun and surprises. What do you think about that? The star of the show, a female pitcher.
Well, you know, I got to watch her in the regional finals, and really, honestly, was skeptical. I honestly was skeptical. I'm sorry to all females out there. I was skeptical that in the championship game of a regional finals that a girl would be able to compete like that. But she threw a heck of a game. It was fun to watch, you know. And all hats off to her and all female baseball players out there.
Well, she's definitely confident. She has a great motion. I mean, Joe, you know more about baseball than I do, but her throwing motion is very complete, compact. not a lot of waste in there. She looks pretty solid on the mound, and she's got a great personality. The other thing I like about the Little League World Series, folks, is that you always get glimpses of these man-childs, these kids that are supposed to be the Little League age, and they look like they're 16, 18, 19. And we know in the past we've had a few that have been older than they're supposed to be. Danny, I can't remember his last name real quick, but a few years ago. But, Joe, isn't it interesting to see how these kids, and you have kids this age, mature so much differently in this Little League age level?
Oh, I was watching one of the regional finals, and I almost thought maybe, I had to look and see, I thought maybe that it was maybe some different level of baseball because the kids were big. They were really big, and you know, Reese had a really good 12-year-old team. You know, when they were 11, they won state, Indiana State. But they were, you know, when they were 12s, they were size wise, they weren't even anywhere near as big as the team I was watching. That's why I had to look and make sure. And that said, Little League, you know, and I was like, okay, this is 12-year-olds, and it was amazing to see that they were 12.
Yeah, it is so interesting. And folks, I was sitting there watching with my youngest son Scott some of the regional games. And I see some of these guys, and they've got facial hair coming in, not just hair, whiskers. And I'm kind of feeling the scruffiness on my face at 52, and I'm thinking, I don't have anything that they've got. I mean, it's just amazing. These guys are heavy-duty shaving, and I'm still trying to figure out how to go a week and get some kind of stubble to show, to give that mature stubble look. Now, Joe, you brought up, football's in the air. We've got Kurt Duxell coming up, Southridge, voice of the Southridge Raiders, talk a little high school football with us in a couple minutes. We've got the NFL and college kicking off. Preseason games are going on in the NFL. One of the teams that should never be in the news, at least it hasn't been for a decade, other than their misery, but they get every headline. And you know where I'm going with this, Joe? It's not Denver. It's not Seattle. It's not Indianapolis. It's Cleveland with Johnny Manziel. The count is on. Mike Patton, the coach of Cleveland, says Hoyer's going to start this next preseason game on Monday. All eyes will be on it to see if Johnny Manziel gets some snaps with the first team. The other question, Joe, I have for you is Johnny Manziel, not just from the football standpoint, does he have what it takes to be a great football player? He was already late for a team meeting a few days before their preseason scrimmage on Monday. Does this guy understand what it takes to be a pro? Apologize there. Joe's went after our first guest, Kurt Duxell. I was talking about Johnny Manziel. Folks, he's already missed a preseason meeting. He's already had issues in the media with flying off on their days off, doing promotional personal appearances and things like that. I'm a Johnny football fan. I think he's going to be the starting quarterback in Cleveland. We'll talk more about that a little bit later on in the show. But I'm going to leave you with this to think about before we go to our first break in this first segment. Johnny Manziel, if he plays as well as Brian Hoyer, who started last year before he got hurt and then came back, if he plays as well as Brian Hoyer, shouldn't Johnny Manziel be the quarterback of the Cleveland Browns? If he's playing just as well, I'm not talking about Brian Hoyer is playing a lot better. I'm talking about if they're playing similar football, why wait? Why wait? Maybe a game, but why wait? Go in there and see what he's got. He was your top pick. He is your future. Find out what he's got. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we're going to talk high school football and anything else that Kurt Duxell wants to talk about, because sometimes he's got a little bit in his crawl and he wants to talk about it. We'll see if he does. He might be in a great mood today since scrimmages are starting and everything like that. But you're listening to the third season of the Coach K and Joe Show.
Does your website work for you?
Your website is an employee. You wouldn't continue to pay an employee that didn't do his job, so don't pay for a site that doesn't produce results. Whether you don't have a site yet or want to improve an existing one, Josh at Idea Fusion Media can help. Want your site to be found easily on search engines like Google? How about growing your business via social media like Facebook? He can help with that as well. Idea Fusion Media, web design that works for you. For your free website review, visit IdeaFusionMedia.com. That's IdeaFusionMedia.com.
This is Tony Ubelar with Ubelar & Sons Toyota in Jasper. You know what happens when you sell a bunch of new Toyotas? You trade for hundreds of great pre-owned cars, trucks, vans, and sport utilities. Many are certified, have factory warranty remaining, fully inspected, and they're all priced to sell. Hurry in for the best selection. Ubelar & Sons Toyota, where customers send their friends for a great pre-owned vehicle since 1929.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Hi, this is Kent Benson, and you're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
He's back. He's back. Kurt Gutzel is back. Season number three, and we got the man, the myth, the legend. Kurt Gutzel, sports director, WBDC, and many other titles, and the voice of the Southridge Raiders. Kurt, welcome back.
Hey, good morning, and welcome back to you guys as well. Congratulations on year number three.
Well, we couldn't do it unless we had legendary figures in the sports world, such as Kurt Gutzel. Kurt, weather in August. Really unbelievable, kind of ushering in this football season. The pros get it started. Here come the colleges, and now the high schools, the gridiron teams are out there. They've been practicing, and we are moving in to the football scrimmage Fridays. Thoughts, feelings, you excited? What's going on?
Well, as you mentioned, it's been a great time for the guys to get ready. They have not had to experience real hot conditions. And another thing, everybody starts school so early, the days of two-a-day practices and all that are a thing of the past. So basically it's practice for 1 or 2 days, start school, and then basically getting into your regular routine. And I don't know if the coaches really like that because they like to get a lot of stuff done. But I'm sure the kids like the way things are set up now. But, yeah, as you said, everybody's real excited about the upcoming season and should have some good football around here.
Well, they're absolutely going to have good football and in some situations outstanding football. I don't have a pulse on all of the southern part of the state yet, but I will in the next couple weeks. But I know this. You cover a team that has, for more than a decade, continued to, coaches have changed, assistants pretty much stay the same, work ethic has stayed the same. Southridge football is in a great cycle right now. What are they doing in Huntingburg and Holland and St. Henry and that area around there? What causes this program to continue to reload, as you might say?
Well, as you know, I'm a coach person. I think it begins and ends with the coaches you hire and the coaches that those head coaches surround themselves with, whether it be back in the day when they made a commitment to have good football and they hired Brad Hander, then they went to Kelly Murphy, and now with Scott Buning, they've not missed. Sometimes, and it really sets you back in any sport, if you have a hire that you miss on. I mean, it could be devastating, or you don't get the right guy, but they've got the right coaches every time they've had an opening, and that's always a concern. And every time that they've had to make a change, or they've not made it, have to make a change, but when they need to make a change, they get the right person. And I think that, and they get guys with enthusiasm that creates excitement for their program and things like that. And I think that's the number one key. And then they, like all sports around this area, they've had dedicated players, dedicated kids, and dedicated families that treat sports and academics and anything they do with enthusiasm and with respect and just do things right. So I think that's some of the big keys on why Southridge has been so successful.
You know, one of the things that I've always found interesting, or I always thought was a key, was the sports that start out the school year, the fall sports, whether it be tennis or golf or football, soccer. I always felt like they had that little bit of an advantage because kids are coming off the summer, although the summer has gotten so short and the kids have little time off from sport to sport anymore. But that's a message and discussion for another show. But they come in, they're excited, as you said. The students are getting back to school. They're excited to get back all together. It creates an electricity. But before you get into the regular season games, which are just around the corner, you go through these preseason scrimmages, these pre-game scrimmages. From your experience and your time and talking with coaches and opponent coaches, what really are these coaches looking to do, looking to see get accomplished on scrimmage Friday? I'll just call it scrimmage Friday.
Well, I think the coaches in the state of Indiana really love this. Back in your day or my day, they had these things called jamborees where you would play, bring four teams or three teams into your site, and you'd play one quarter of football against one team, another quarter against somebody else, and the clock ran. And by the time you were done, you didn't get anything done because it went so fast. The clock was moving. But with these controlled scrimmages, they go on for like 2 hours. It's against another opponent that you don't normally play during the regular season, and they set up situations. They've done this with basketball. You'll throw your ones against their ones, your twos against their twos. We'll go down to the 20-yard line, and we'll run red zone plays against your goal line defense. We will go to a passing period where we're going to run passing plays, or we're going to run running plays against your specific defense. It's basically whatever the coaches want to do, and they've done this in basketball where they'll say, hey, we're not going to run this period of time. We're going to play zone against your zone offense and, you know, man-to-man and this and that and the other against, you know, ones against ones, twos against twos. They find this very beneficial because it's just kind of an opportunity to play somebody that you normally don't play. And between the coaches, they say, hey, you know, we haven't really done very well in the preseason against stopping the run or stopping the pass. Throw some of that stuff at you and vice versa. We'll do something that benefits you. And you get a good, really good look about what you might need to work on or, you know, say, hey, we're going to play a spread team in a couple of weeks. What kind of spread package do you have, and would you mind running it against us here tonight? So the coaches love this stuff. It's a good way to go into the season, and I think the kids really enjoy it too because it breaks up the monotony of practice that they've had for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I would really think that this is a win-win on both sides of the football and a win-win on both sides of the locker room. And what I mean by that is the players and the coaches in the locker room. The coaches get to turn this into a teaching time, like you said, to work on things that they really need to work on in more of a game atmosphere. It's not totally a game speed, but it's got that kind of a feel, that kind of emotion. The players get jacked up. Let's face it. They're going to go out on the field. They're going to go out in front of family, friends, some fans. They're playing against somebody they haven't been seen in drills every day for the last couple weeks. They get jacked up. So you get a little bit of that raw emotion, that game speed, but it's not just about, as you said, just playing some downs and seeing who scores or does. It's about being able to teach and change up as you're playing and really not have to worry about the scoreboard, but get a combination of all those things together while you're teaching. And I know as a coach, that's just an awesome opportunity to find out where you're going to slip. You know, I always talk about when you go from drills to scrimmage to game, there's always that slippage that happens. Where are we slipping at? What do we need to come back before our first game? So that's awesome stuff. Kurt, what can you tell us about this upcoming Raider team? What they got coming back? Who's it going to focus on? Is there somebody unknown that you got your eyes on?
Well, they're going to have a really good team. They finished a good season with a disappointing loss to Pele last year in the a regional, but they return a lot of players on offense, especially at the skill position. positions with Connor Craig, who's a top 25 state player by the Football Digest magazine. He's going to be a really solid running back for them, and he made a lot of lift last year the way he played. They returned their senior quarterback in Luke Stetter. They returned a couple of good tight ends that they relied on last year, and they do return a few good offensive linemen, but they did lose some last year. And that's going to be a key on their offensive side of the ball to replace some of those linemen. On the defensive side of the ball, they return one of the better linebackers around in Brett Nordoff, who's been playing since he was a sophomore, early in his sophomore season. And, again, some really good, strong kids. And that's been one of their strengths, if you will, the strength of their team down through the years with the way they've, you know, attacked the weight room and attacked the physical conditioning. So I think they, with the guys they got back and the leadership that they've got back, I think they can have a really good season.
Well, I think what's going to be interesting as well is a few weeks down the road when they hook up with a veteran and very well, a great program in itself when Jasper and Southridge hook up. That should be a fun rivalry game. But Southridge participates in the PAC Pocket Athletic Conference. Few of the teams, Kurt, that are on your radar as being solid teams in that conference this year, I'm assuming Gibson Southern probably is one of them. Your thoughts on that conference?
Well, because Gibson Southern won it last year, I would say the road to the championship will go through them. They return a lot of good players, including their a fine quarterback in Scheller. So, again, I'm going to have them the favorite, but, again, Southridge will be right behind them. And the beauty of this, they don't play again until that last regular season game heading into the tournament. So that'll be a big buildup for that. Heritage Hills will be improved. They were banged up like crazy last year with Wilkerson not being able to play quarterback, and they've got a good receiver this year in Kenton Cruz, and he's a two-way player. North Posey will be pretty good this season. They return a lot of players because they had a lot of young guys last year. So it's going to be tough up and down the line in the Pocket Athletic Conference, but Gibson Southern and Southridge are probably the head of the class going in. And, you know, that could all change once we see guys out on the field and see teams play each other. But I'd have to say Gibson Southern and Southridge are right at the top.
Well, I think it's going to be an exciting year in that conference. You look for some other teams to hopefully improve. I know Forest Park has tried to develop a football program. They've struggled. They had a couple years where they looked like they were bounding up, and then they dropped back a little bit. Any thoughts on DuBois County neighbor Forest Park?
Yeah, they've got a good quarterback in Ben Wenholt, who'll be a junior. He took over after battling an injury last year, and I think Ross and Foose and company are going to have a nice season because they played a lot of young guys last year. And again, it's a tough conference to try to get up into that next level of top teams because you're playing good teams every week. But I think they're looking for a little bit of a bounce back this season as well. And the key to their success will be staying injury free. You know, they're one of the smaller schools in that league, you know, a 2A team in that league and a lower end 2A team. So I think they're looking forward to the season and just hoping to keep some players healthy. But, you know, whether you're talking about Scheller, Gibson Southern, or Stetter at Southridge, or Nolan Aarons at Jasper, in high school, college, or the pros, if you got a quarterback that can play, you're going to be ahead of the game. And I think with Wenholt pulling the trigger, he's 6'3", 6'4", really good athletic type of player, I think you're going to be ahead of the game, at least to start, if your quarterback can play. And I think Forest Park is on the right track with the guy they got back there.
Well, there's no doubt that football on the high school level in the state of Indiana is on an upswing in general. Football up in the Indianapolis area is outstanding with just tremendously skilled players. We don't have as many in the southern part of the state, but the coaching is outstanding. The interest is there, the effort, and we do have some pretty solid skill players in the pocket. Athletic Conference is one of those conferences in the South that produces what I believe are two or three pretty solid teams every year. You sprinkle in a few others as they try to get their numbers up, keep their numbers, and you know, even if they have the quarterback, they have the running back, you got to have somebody up on the front line. That's always a battle. Kurt, I'm going to switch channels here with you before we end this segment. The NCAA, let's jump into college, the NCAA and the power conferences. I can't wait to get your thoughts on this. You may not have major thoughts right now. They're going to allow these power conferences to make some decisions on stipends and how they deal with some of those issues. Are we opening up? Some people say a can of worms. I'm wondering if we're opening up a can of scorpions. How is this thing going to be controlled? You're going to have 80 people come together to try to put some rules in place. The SEC, the Big Ten, they're never going to agree. Some of these schools are capable of doing a lot more than others. And then you have the rest of the colleges on the Division I level. Are we just at the tip of the iceberg here, Kurt?
Well, I think you are, because you got these Power 5 or Power 6 conferences. And let's face it, even within that group, there are some haves and have-nots. I mean, you know, you go in the SEC, you know, Alabama's going to give their guys this and that and the other. But can Vanderbilt, who's in the same league, are they, and Kentucky, are they going to be able to give their guys that same? And if not, who's going to keep the good players that Vanderbilt might get occasionally from going to Alabama or going to Texas? And then you got the situation where it's Division I football, whether you're in the MAC or you're at Texas or Alabama, but it's not the same. They call it Division I football, 1A football, but it's not, because the rules are different. So I see where these Power 5, Power 6 conferences are coming at this. They should be able to make their own rules, but again, within the Power 6, like you said, there's going to be even more breaking off of this and more have and have nots. So I just want somebody to explain how this is going to work. You know, are they going to have a plan before they jump into this, or are they going to just, you know, go by the seat of their pants and whatever sounds good in a certain situation, are they going to go with it? I mean, I would hate to have to organize this and how it's going to work or be the guy in charge, but I just think that these guys at the top are so gung-ho about what they want to do and how they want to do it. Even people in their own league be damned, because this is how the big boys are going to do it. I mean, does that make sense? You know, because it's even within the big-time conferences, there's still people at the bottom. There's always going to be a bottom or the top in every situation.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that we even further have to consider that we're going to see more cheating. I think we're going to see more. I think it's going to turn back into the old days, Kurt, when the handshake, money handshakes came into play, because we're going to have this money that they can get, and in certain instances at certain universities, in order to make sure they get the right guy, so-and-so is going to come in and work a little extra money into the game. I can't explain how it's all going to come together, but I think they're really going to have, in trying to solve a situation in which probably these athletes should get some kind of increased stipend, I think it's going to – I like to use the term the wild, wild west, the roaring 20s. I think it's all going to be back there again. The other thing that I want to touch on before we end this segment, the Ed O'Bannon rule, the courts came out, said, yes, these guys need to get a piece of the pie. You've got the new SEC station, television station coming on, like the Big Ten Network. These guys have been making a fortune off replays and things like of games and interviews and these things. The changing landscape of the business that is now college sports, to me, Kurt, you got to look at that and say, okay, we're going to set up trust funds, we're going to pay these guys and set up accounts, and we're going to move this money in. How far back do you go? How does the SEC network and the Big Ten network go about paying these guys for their likenesses, their replays? Is this like movie deals? They get X percent? I mean, isn't this also coming in with the change in how they pay stipends? This is just... wow, this is mind-boggling at how amateur athletics are no longer amateur athletics. Well, and even in that scenario, who do you decide is who you pay? Okay, you know, you sell Johnny Manziel's jersey down at the Texas A&M bookstore. So, okay, you're making money off that, so you're going to pay a guy like Johnny Manziel. But what about the lineman that blocks for Johnny Manziel that maybe he's not as well known, but he in his heart and maybe in his place on the team is just as important, but he's not as high profile. Where do you begin and where do you stop on who you're giving this money to or for likeness? I mean, say I just don't know how you legislate this and how you go about setting the parameters on how you're going to compensate people for their likeness or for their jersey sale or for their worth to an organization. I mean, I think that would, I mean, talk about breaking up a locker room or breaking up a program. I mean, when you're telling me this guy's more important than this guy, that's why we're going to give him more, do not as much. I mean, where do you organize all this stuff? I mean, that's going to be a great job for somebody, and it's going to be a hard job for somebody.
I think if you are thinking about going into the world of sports agents or attorneys, my God, we've already got more attorneys than we need, and I've got two sisters who are attorneys. I apologize,
right,
Jennifer and Beth, but this is an attorney's dream, what is going to go on, sports agent dream. They're going to want their 10%, and there's going to be plenty of athletes out there that they can fight for, and the courts are just going to be full of this. Kurt, last thing, when you talk about this, the stipends and the things like this, I worry about a school like the University of Evansville, who already struggles financially. The Missouri Valley does not have the revenue-producing network and things like that. I wonder if the NCAA and the court systems death nail in these lower tier financial Division I schools, and maybe it says, you know what, we just can't play in this arena anymore. Your thoughts?
Well, I certainly agree because you know, we hear all this, you know, these guys need to be paid. This is a business. We need to run a business model. Well, okay. The men's basketball team at Evansville, okay, you're going to be able to pay them a little bit or pay their guys or give those guys a stipend. But what you're going to say is, because it's a business model in this women's volleyball team or men's golf team or U of E's baseball team, if this is run by like a true business model, we're not going to keep on throwing money to play at a Division I level because we're in the business of making money and paying out money to our guys. So if all these people want to say that it needs to be, you know, this is business and this needs to be run by a business model, it's going to be like every other business. Some of that other stuff is going to be shut down, and even a thing like Title IX isn't going to be able to stand up. And you're getting back to law and lawyers. You know, it's like I said, if it's going to be like a real business model, like all these people are saying they want it to be in the free market and whatever, some of these other things are going to fall by the wayside at a school like Evansville or even a school like Indiana or Purdue, where some of the lower sports, whether it be men's or women's, it's going to be a cost-cutting thing, and those things are going to a thing of the past, and that's where I think this the slip and slide and the danger zone of all this comes into play.
Well, folks, I told you that if Kurt Gooksell had something on his mind to fire him up, we'd get it out. We got him. I agree.
Is that not making? I mean, I could be totally wrong. I could be thinking not be thinking clearly on this. But I mean, think that's if you want it to be so bad a business, and you want to pay people, and you know, my business isn't going to throw money at stuff that doesn't, you know, produce the bottom line. So I think that's where you get in trouble with this and creating that situation.
I agree with you 110%. The NCAA went to the extreme on the rule books. And Bill Somm, one of our contributors, former czar of gambling and also other areas at the NCAA, has been on. And we'll talk this again. I'd love to have you on at the same time because they went to one extreme. They were so inflexible. They were so inflexible. They were so unlike the tree that stands up in the forest against the winds. They didn't bend. Now they've got their backs to the wall. Now we're going the other way. I feel sorry for the University of Evansville. I really do. I think that an athletic department that's already having trouble meeting its financial needs, this is absolutely going to be a difficult, a hard hill for them to climb. They're not the only ones. I'm just pointing out UV because they're in our backyard. There'll be many others out there, and we'll have to see. We'll have to see what where they're allowed to get their money from. But I'll tell you what, there's just not a lot of money, guys, in some of these smaller universities.
Well, even within their own conference, they'll be behind the eight ball. When you're looking at some of these other state schools that are in, you know, Evansville's not going to be on the same playing field as somebody like Indiana State and all this, because they're a state institution. They're, you know, they generate more revenue in different places. You know, like you, Evansville, and some of those people like that are really going to be hit hard if that's the direction that we go on all this.
I think it's really interesting. I think there's a lot more to talk about on this. Kurt, good luck in the high school football scrimmages. We're going to be having you back because we got to talk more high school football. But we're going to have to talk about some of these other things and the Little League World Series. I know you love baseball. Kurt, thanks for being on, and have a great weekend, buddy.
Coach, no problem, anytime.
All right, we're going to go to break. It was fantastic to have our contributor, WBDC Sports Director Kurt Guxell, joined us as we start our second show of season number 3. Folks, don't go away. Call a buddy to join you or a gal to join you. We're going to break. You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Hey, this is Coach K. Want to get the word out about your business? We'll team up with the Coach K and Joe Show and form a winning marketing team, and we can help put your marketing dollars to work 24 hours a day. Through our live shows and our 24-hour available podcasts, your marketing dollars can work for you around the clock. So give us a call at Milligan Communications, 812-630-2449, and we will help your marketing dollars to score for you.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
This is Tom Deanhart of the Big Ten Network, and you're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
When you're hot, you're hot. When you're not, you're not. Put all the money in and let it roll again. When you're hot, you're hot. La 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 la. La 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 la. La 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 la.
And we're back on the Coach K and Joe Show. You know what that music means. That means we got Don Schulteis, Indy Hoops contributor, in the house with Who's Hot, Who's Not. Don, this show is fired up today. We just had Kurt Guxell going on. I'm claiming that Paul George has changed his number to number 13 to pay homage to me for my junior year. Number 13, go on our Twitter site, on the Facebook site, see the picture of my junior high school junior year shooting shirt, number 13. Everything's going. What's hot, Don, and what's not?
Well, it's going to be hard to compete with that, Coach, today. I mean, you guys must be drinking those high-powered energy drinks because there's a lot going on the Coach K and Joe Show today.
I don't know. I'm doing double espresso coffees. Joe, he might have a little Java juice going at home. I'm not sure on that. What you got for us today, Don?
All right, well, let's get right into it because I know you got a full show today, but we'll start off on the not hot side. And, Joe, perk up and listen to this because I'll tell you what, IU's athletic department has hired former Purdue University player Terry Morin, who has just resigned as Indiana State University head basketball coach. She played at Seymour in high school and went on to star and I think be a two-year starter for Purdue University. IU has hired her as the next women's basketball coach for the Lady Hoosiers. Now, as a former alumni, Coach K, and the fact that this is not the first time this has happened, the IU athletic director did something similar with now head coach at Purdue, Coach Versa,
back in like 2006, hired her as a head lady Hoosier women's basketball coach to do this. And by the way, she only lasted 1 year and then took the job at Purdue and left the Hoosiers hanging, like a lot of Purdue people do. IU's athletic department goes ahead and hires another one. Can you believe that? So they lead off, Coach, as not hot.
Well, we've seen over the last decade, and Fred Glass has done a much better job here overall, the IU athletic department doing a lot of dumb things. But there are certain lines you do not cross. Joe, you're a Purdue guy. There's certain lines you do not cross. I don't think this line should be crossed, but we'll have to see what happens.
Yeah, I don't see Purdue ever doing something similar.
I guess that's Joe's
2 cents worth.
I knew Joe was in the bathroom.
All right, flipping over to the hot side, Coach K. I think most of the sports fans listening have heard that Rory McIlroy had won his second consecutive major this year after winning the PGA Championship, played at nearby to the Coach K and Joe Show radio studio in Louisville, Kentucky. This is his fourth major, second consecutive this year. He's made, I think, almost $7 million this year, Coach K, and he's ranked number one in professional golf in the world. I would say, Coach K, with that victory at Valhalla, and his number one ranking, and all the perks that you get along with that, Rory is hot.
And Don, it all started when he told his fiancée, I know the reservations have been sent out, the invitations for our wedding, but it's going to have to be canceled. It made her very hot, but not in the right way, but Rory got steaming hot.
No doubt. He's on a roll and really competing with Tiger is one of the best, if he continues, to have ever played the game. Now, flipping over, you talked about him. So on my not-hot list this week, one Tony Stewart, who is a three-time NASCAR champion and arguably one of the best, if not the best, race car drivers in the world, was racing at Canandaigua Motorsports Park last weekend at the dirt track with dirt cars and hit young Mr. Kevin Ward Jr. and killed him during the race, during a yellow flag. Tony's in a lot of hot water, no pun intended, and although I wish him the best and obviously wish the Ward family the best, Tony Stewart this week, Coach, is not hot.
Sad situation.
All right, on the hot side, interesting for veteran head college football coach Steve Spurrier, who, as we all know, had an illustrious career at Florida, and moved into the pros and then came back into college as South Carolina's head coach and has done an incredible job there, Coach. He's in his 10th year this year. He's built them up, and they just came off their third straight 11-2 season. And he, with his first victory this year, Coach, and the reason he's made the list on the hot side, he will join coaching greats Bear Bryant and Vince Dooley as the only SEC coaches with 200 or more wins. Bear, at Kentucky and Alabama, has 292, so it's going to be a while before he catches him. And Vince Dooley at Georgia, made Georgia a great football power in the SEC, has 201 victories. So Steve Spurrier, with his first victory of the year this year, will join them in the 200-plus club. And the Gamecocks are ranked number 9 going into preseason, so I'm sure he's going to get that and go beyond. But where's Nick Saban, Coach? Where's Nick Saban with all the success he's had at Alabama? He's going to have to coach a few more years.
Yeah, he's got to be pretty close to joining that list. I was just thinking that. And, Don, I might add that the old ball coach, Steve Spurrier, the old ball coach, came into South Carolina after a coaching great that you and I both admire, had come back and kind of got that program righted, had a little issue with some NCAA rules at the end. I think there was a lot going on in his personal life as well. Lou Holtz went into South Carolina and kind of revived that program. And the old ball coach, Steve Spurrier, has come in and taken it to the next level.
He sure has. And Steve Spurrier this week, Coach, is hot. Flipping over to the not hot side, and this will be the last one on this side of the ledger, Coach. America's team, the Dallas Cowboys of the NFL, have been dealt and have been dealing with tons of drama and adversity. Starting off at the end of last football season, Tony Roma had surgery at the end of the season and on his back and had a lengthy rehab. They've lost middle linebacker Sean Lee to an ACL injury on the first day of off-season training back in the winter, early spring. Rookie pass rusher DeMarcus Lawrence breaks a foot. He's going to be out half of this football season. Cornerbacks Brandon Carr and Morris Claiborne have practiced little due to personal and injury reasons. And then we go on with 4-game suspension for cornerback Orlando Scandrick. He had PED, performance-enhancing drug violations. They didn't really pick up anything noteworthy in the draft, although I would argue with that. Zach Martin's a great lineman coming out of Notre Dame, but they passed on Johnny Manziel, so they didn't really get any of the PR from the draft. And they really have been constrained by salary cap issues to do anything in the free agency market. And one last thing to add a little salt to the wound, Coach. Owner Jerry Jones, who has been, quote, unquote, happily married for the past 50 years, was pictured with two different women in some compromising positions, if you will, over the course of this offseason. And so with all the drama and with all the adversity, the Dallas Cowboys, known as America's team, are not hot.
Jerry, I'll tell you what. They are America's comedy team. It doesn't matter. They have wasted who I think is a pretty good quarterback in Tony Romo because they don't find him any protection. They have a defense that's awful, as you mentioned, injuries galore. And then the owner, who is always criticizing his players for bringing bad PR to the team. I think, Don, he's not hot. I just think he loves for people to talk about him.
No doubt about that. He, I guess he goes by the old adage, Coach, that any publicity is good publicity. So when you can't be making publicity with positive things, winning, you know, your players doing the right things, and you do it the other way, and it's still good PR, and it probably will bring those 80 to 90,000, 100,000 to that big old Texas stadium that they've got.
Yeah,
anyway, we're going to wrap up, Coach, this segment with, I think, to be a great positive. Coach John Beilein of Michigan, University of Michigan men's basketball team, back in June of 2011, offered a scholarship to an Indiana native up in Fort Wayne, was attending Fort Wayne Canterbury High School by the name of Austin Hatch. Listeners may remember that Austin was flying in Michigan with his father. His father was a pilot in a private plane, and they had an airplane crash. Killed his father and his stepmother. Did a lot of damage to Austin. He had brain and body trauma. In fact, he spent time in a coma. And incidentally, Coach, this was not the first time Austin had survived a plane crash. When he was younger, his father had another plane crash that killed his mother, his brother, and his sister during that time. So here it is, enduring a second crash, having been offered and committed to the university basketball team. John Beilein, through this whole period of time, has been faithfully committed to Austin, visited him at least twice in the hospital, has had regular conversations with him through the last few years of his rehab, and has honored, Coach, has honored the scholarship that he committed to Austin back in 2011. And Austin is now at the University of Michigan on scholarship practicing basketball. And I might add, at this time, is in no way playing at the level that he was even back then when he was offered. So kudos to Coach John Beilein and the University of Michigan men's basketball team. You guys, especially Coach Beilein, are hot.
Man, Don, that is great stuff. And I want to tell you that in a day and age when we get all these coaches, these university college coaches talking about commitment and people making commitments, and then we see them run this kid off and run that kid off and switch schools and take another contract after signing a five-year contract, it is refreshing that Coach Beilein, who I think and always have said is one of the classiest coaches. He's not Hollywood. He's not media savvy. He's just the throwback coach who tries to do it the right way, the best way he can, and with integrity. And I was critical of Michigan, the way they built their team. I just did not think they could make a run through the Big Ten. He absolutely proved me wrong with their shooting and their ability to get things done, but I never questioned him as a coach and a leader. And, Don, that is a great story. It's a sad story, but obviously this young man who's come through two crashes, there's something he's supposed to do, and John Beilein is obviously a part of that.
No doubt about it, Coach. It's a great thing to read about and hear about, and it'll be interesting to see where Austin ends up over the next 3 to 4 or 5 years, depending on how. Incidentally, he's a really smart kid. He's contemplating becoming a doctor, which his father was, or going into business and having a business career. So great student as well.
Well, once again, Don, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, and that really wraps up the hot and not segment this week, Coach.
Well, once again, great job. And I'll tell you what, I mean this. Listeners to this show, you get a little who's hot, who's not, get a little Jerry Reed, you get a little Don Schulteis insight, but you get a story like that about Michigan and Beilein and Austin Hatch. You get a story about somebody's life. And probably, unless you're churning through everything to find it, it's a great story. You find it here on the Coach K and Joe Show. We're going to go to break. If you haven't heard, white smoke billowed through the chimney, and that meant one thing,
a new Major League Baseball commissioner, and Black Smoke is billowing through Cincinnati when it comes to their baseball team. We're going to talk about that and maybe a little bit more with Cincinnati Reds and MLB contributor Jeff Cochran coming up after the break. You are listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
This is Tony Ubelar with Ubelar Chevy Cadillac in Jasper. Have you ever heard a car ad that looks too good to be true or has fast-talking fine print?
Buy before midnight tonight. Maybe okay, maybe not. You probably aren't eligible for this event. Ubelar's prices are better, but you can't know that.
You want to hear Ubelar's fine print? That's right, silence. Our prices will save you money, huge inventory, even bigger discounts. Ubelar & Sons Chevy Cadillac in Jasper, where customers send their friends since 1929.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Hi, this is John Goldsberry, former Boilermaker and Buffalo Bill, and you're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back on the Coach K and Joe Show. We're going to have John Goldsberry on and catch up with him again. But next up, and this is made possible by today's guests, are courtesy of the Lantern Road Capital Coaches Line. That's right, Lantern Road Capital, financial partners to grow your business. You got a business idea, you got a business in progress, you need capital, get a hold of Lantern Road Partners, a capital group that can get you to the next level. We have with us, and I told you there's white smoke coming out of MLB, there's dark smoke coming out of Cincinnati. We've got Jeff Cochran to tell us all about it. Jeff, welcome to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Hey, it's good to be back on, guys. Hope all is well with you. It's like you said, it's been a busy day in baseball. Yesterday was the election, and of Rob Manfred as the 10th commissioner of Major League Baseball, and he will take over January 25th from. The long-standing commissioner, self-appointed commissioner, Bud Selig.
And I might add that, you know, there were a lot of questions going on here, Jeff, about who's coming in. A lot of people were saying Jerry Reinsdorf, who is a good friend of Bud Selig. I mean, very good friend, big supporter of him, at least through the years, did not necessarily want Rob Manfred. At least that's the way it was reported. He was not an automatic choice. What were the issues there?
Well, I think Bud Selig was very good to the owners of baseball the last 20-some years that he's been commissioner. And I think that Jerry Reinsdorf, as an owner, wanted another owner to be the commissioner. And, you know, he came out and said after the election of Manfred yesterday that the process was complete, then though he didn't support Manfred initially, he's happy with the process, and he believes Manfred is his best position to move the game forward and really attract a younger generation, which really has been a problem for the game of baseball. I think that's the one major weakness is they've lost a young generation of fans that they're going to have to scramble now to try to build a young fan base. Their fan base is aging, and they're going to have to get to the point where they can start to attract younger fans.
You know, you make a great point right there, and for our listeners, we're talking about a professional sport that really is, as much as they've got some struggles ahead of them, they need to be proactive. They can't be an NCAA and put their head in the sand. Selig came in, Jeff, they were about a little less than a $2 billion business. He's grown them to about $9 billion. But your point is well taken. I'm going to tell you why. I have a 13-year-old son, Scott. When I used to get up in the morning when I was 13, I pulled out the newspaper and I looked who played last night, Major League Baseball, who won, what each hitter did. I'll watch it on SportsCenter now or one of the other networks if the Coach K and Joe Show is not going that day. But my son, the 13-year-old, and even my son who's 24, they do not get up and they do not look through the baseball scores and they do not check out the individual players like you did, like I did, like Joe did. Like the generation before us did. Your point is well taken. There is, because we have this buffet of sports out there, we have a generation of burgeoning soccer fans coming up. This is really something that Major League Baseball is going to have to deal with, because all that money that's coming in from TV revenues, that may start to become a little bit less if they can't show the numbers to substantiate it.
That's true, and I think that, you know, the one thing that Major League Baseball has done better than anybody is technologically with MLB at Bat and MLB.com, Baseball Advanced Media is a subdivision of Major League Baseball that creates those apps, that creates the ability to see those statistics, and I think that in itself provides a great platform for younger fans. Baseball is a game driven by statistics, as we know. We all know what 715 and 755 meant. We all knew what 4192 and later 4256 means. Those are things that are ingrained in us as baseball fans. And I think that the ability to attract those fans really from that young technological perspective, the iPad app, the iPhone app, I think it's a great starting point for attracting younger fans. But I think they really need to do more as far as, you know, you look around at baseball fields in July and August and nobody's playing baseball. They're all starting to play football again. And I think that the one thing that can help baseball is all the concussions in football. I think, you know, baseball is poised for a rebirth because parents are going to be afraid to have their kids hurt permanently by a football concussion. So I think you're going to see, and I hope Manfred has some ideas. And I think the one thing that's become apparent is when you see NFL ads on Nickelodeon and some of the younger child, you know, the Disney Channel. I think you have to position baseball on those channels and in those markets to attract younger fans. And, you know, well, I think Manfred is a good guy to do that because he has a background in baseball, 25 years. He's a Harvard-trained lawyer, and he is, going to be faced with a lot of obstacles in baseball, and I think the young fan issue is one of his main obstacles. But he's got several more that he's positioned to attack.
Well, we definitely are in a generation, and, folks, I've embraced it. And I'm sure, Jeff, you have. I mean, I've embraced the new social media generation. I've embraced all the technology. I'm not as good as my kids are at it, but I'm embracing it because if you don't embrace it, you can't shape it. You can't share in it. If you just put your hand
That's
up,
right.
then you get left behind. Major League Baseball has to become – I think they've got a kind of a Jekyll and Hyde situation. Hear me out. Give me your thoughts on this, Jeff. That we're in a social media, fast, up to date, get it done. We've got it right now in a game that takes sometimes 3 hours to play. I got to believe the commissioner has to look at that and say, how do we, without taking the integrity out of the game, without changing too much of the purity of the game, how do we speed this game up and make this next generation more comfortable with it?
And that's exactly what I was getting to. He has a lot of issues to attack, and I think the game is one of those primary issues that will attract younger fans. You know, in the old days when you had a game, it took 2 hours and 6 minutes. A 2-1 game now takes 3 hours and 47 minutes. So, there's a lot of ideas. There's one is a pitch clock, and obviously old-time baseball fans hate the idea of having a clock in the game. But maybe a pitch clock for those, you know, human rain delay pitchers that take forever between pitches. Maybe you try to, negotiate with their sponsors, and obviously the game's driven by sponsors as well, too. You know, to go to 15-second commercial breaks as opposed to 30-second commercial breaks. Maybe you try to shorten the space between innings. Maybe you try to, eliminate batters jumping out of the box every 3 seconds to adjust their batting gloves. You know, there's a lot of ways to attack this, and I think that, that's definitely something that has to be done in this I want it now mentality mode. And I think the pace of the game is something that's going to have to be addressed.
I think you absolutely have to go for the pace of the game. And I'm going to say this, and you old big-time baseball people, don't get mad. Think about it. We all said it with the three-pointer. We all said it with the shot clock. I don't think a pitch clock is bad. I think that every pitcher, every athlete has to learn to adjust. Don't give me this, I need extra time in between pitches. You're just going to have to learn how to pitch a little bit quicker. And I'm going to throw another thing out at you, Jeff, and you're probably going to say you're insane, Coach K, and that's okay. I've been called worse, believe me, and will be called worse. You know, there was an era that you and I grew up in, and you know this is true, when we were younger. You know, you brought in a relief pitcher in the seventh inning. He pitched seventh, eighth, and ninth. He pitched the eighth and ninth. We didn't have five relief pitchers in a game. And I'm wondering if they don't look at that rule a little bit and decide how many guys you can bring in an inning or in a course of a game, something different. Because, you know, Tony La Russa, great manager, and a couple other guys, you know, they may bring in three or four guys to face the side of an inning. And you talk about taking time.
La Russa was the kind of guy that would bring in a pitcher to throw one strike against a batter, and then he'd bring in another pitcher to finish the batter. So, yeah, I see what you mean, and I think that's part of it. That definitely incurs delay in the game. I just don't see, you know, the other part of this thing is the Major League Baseball Players Association, which is the strongest union of any professional sports avenue. I just don't see where they would allow a situation where they're going to eliminate positions for relievers. And I think that you know, that in itself kind of leads to other issues that Rob Manfred's going to have to face as commissioner. I think the whole MLBPA labor situation, the collective bargaining agreement, is going to expire at the end of 2016. He's going to negotiate the deals on the last three CBAs. So, you know, labor peace is going to come into the fray for Rob Manfred. You know, he's got a lot of issues at stake. And I think that, you know, one thing that I think has to be addressed in both leagues is they've got to have either the DH in both leagues or they've got to have no DH. And I absolutely hate the DH. I hate the designated hitter rule. I've always hated the designated hitter rule. I'm a National League guy. I love the idea of the pitchers being involved in strategy and changing the pitcher based on the batting order. I love that part of the game. And I hate the idea that the DH could come to both leagues. And I think what has to come up, you know, as a possibility is adding roster slots to appease the MLBPA if they decide to eliminate the DH. I don't see it going that way. I think what's going to happen is the DH is going to end up being in both leagues. And I think that in itself is going to add pace to the game as opposed to shorten the pace of the game.
I would agree with you, and I would also agree that the Players Association will fight hard not to give up, as you call, roster spots to people. And the DH has extended the career of many players and given a career to many players. Jeff, the other thing I want to hit on before we switch over to the Reds, you know, the Little League World Series has started, and I just saw Seoul Korea and I think it was Croatia possibly play. One of the things Major League Baseball has tried to do but really needs to do a better job of, in my opinion, and again, Rob Manfred can figure it out, the NBA has done a great job of it. Football's trying to make some inroads in it. Soccer, of course, is international in scope. But creating baseball to be more of an international game, I've got to believe that they can play off things like the Little League World Series and find ways to jettison Major League Baseball and the potential of a growth in Major League Baseball into other areas to create even greater fan bases internationally, whether they're playing a professional team over there, but keeping them connected on the internet, cable television, the digital era, whatever it might be. Your thoughts on that?
I think I agree with that, Ken. I think that the World Baseball Classic that's held every 4 years has really been a great thing for baseball. It, you know, you have teams from the Netherlands competing in a World Baseball competition. You know, I think the scheduling is such that it worries teams. It's right before spring training or right, you know, at the beginning of the season. And you've got the fear that your pitcher is going to, you know, throw out his elbow or his shoulder in one of those exhibition-type contests. But I really think that it's been a great thing for baseball. And I think, you know, down the road, I think Rob Manfred has to consider expansion. You know, ideally, you've got a place that was great for baseball. You've got Montreal that should have a team again. I think there should be a team in Mexico. You know, how great would it be if there's a team in Puerto Rico? And, you know, with the way this, you know, South American and Central America develops their baseball players, I think you could see a day where you have teams in those areas as well. You know, the Dominican Republic is just a hotbed of baseball, and Venezuela as well, too. So, you know, I think those are situations. I don't anticipate they would be looking at expansion over the Pacific or the Atlantic Ocean, but you still you can travel to Puerto Rico as easily as you can, you know, Arizona. So I think if you keep the travel distances short, I think you can look at expansion. And obviously expansion brings a watering down of talent, so to speak, but I still think that that's a great way to enhance the game. And you look at, you know, you look at the rosters of the Major League Baseball teams, the 25-man rosters, and, you know, maybe 10 or 12 of those 25 are Hispanic players. So I think it, you know, if you can bring Major League Baseball to those markets, I think you're going to really enhance your game. And I think you're going to enhance your standing as commissioner.
I think Rob Manfred needs to give the Coach K and Joe Show a call when you're on and talk about this, because I think Mexico, the rest of Central America, South America is a direction to go. And I'm going to tell you why. Not only do we have some proximity to it, do we share some information from TV and whatever, we've got a huge Latin population growing in this country. They will soon be the majority down the road. And I think I'm going to throw this out, Jeff. I'm going to throw this out to you and to our listeners. Why can't Major League Baseball consider something the NFL is considering doing? Why can't Major League Baseball in some of these countries where we have good relationships, but they may not have the money financially to build the type of stadium that Major League Baseball may want, why can't Major League Baseball, which is a $9 billion industry, help to finance a couple of these stadiums in order to get the ball rolling and increase that exposure and get these people get to the ballparks and enticing some of the billionaire owners in South America and Central America, business people, to consider possibly taking on a franchise as well? I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility.
No, it's
considering it.
I think that's something that would happen, especially in some of the lower income countries. I think MLB would finance stadiums, and I think that's something that you know, they would probably want to have tight ownership control of those franchises as well. You know, I'm sure they don't want Colombian drug money coming into baseball. I'm sure they don't want heavily gambling, you know, heavy gambling money coming into baseball. So I would think that would do a pretty good job in due diligence and looking at ownership and determining who their owner and where their franchises would be. And these are great issues that, you know, Rob Manfred has to address. I think the expansion issue is probably a longer-term issue. I think the first thing that he has to take care of is the labor situation, which is probably why he got hired. You know, the CBA expires at the end of next season. They've gone now 20 years and 3 days That was 20 years ago on August 9th that the strike occurred in 1994. And obviously they don't want to have a situation like that. I think that's the first thing on Manfred's agenda. I think the other thing that they have to address really before they can look abroad is they have to address the stadium issues in Tampa Bay and in Oakland. I think that, you know, Oakland, every time it rains, the dugout floods, and it's not pretty floods. It's bathroom backing up. In Tampa Bay, you got a great well-run franchise, and you're playing in front of 12,000 people every night. So I think those are two things that are really at the forefront of Rob Manfred's steps as the new commissioner of baseball before he goes into pace of game and expansion issues.
Well, we'll see how the new commissioner takes care of that as we go forward, and we'll be keeping an eye on it as he takes office and starts moving forward. Let's head over to the Queen City. The smoke is not white in Cincinnati. It's getting ugly over there, Jeff, and I know you are a big Cincinnati Red fan. I'll be traveling over there next weekend, but what has happened to a team that had so much potential? We can say injuries. I know the pitching's been there. The hitting hasn't. Then they get a little hitting, pitching struggles. I know Billy Hamilton has done as good or better than expected. I know Todd Frazier is having a solid year. But when Todd Frazier and Billy Hamilton are your bright spots, that means other guys like Jay Bruce and Joey Votto and a few other guys that needed to be are not. Where are we at with the Reds, who may be sub 500 right now? I don't know.
They are as of last night, one game under 500. They are 6.5 out of the division race. They are 4 games out of the wild card race. Bailey is going on the DL tomorrow, and with flexor mass and his elbow. So, and Alfredo Simon, who was, you know, 13-2 going to the All-Star break, has run out of gas, and he probably needs to go back to the bullpen. So you're looking at a situation where Reds pitching has been great. Leak has been pitched really better than anyone would ever expect. Cueto has been dominant and is a Cy Young candidate. And Matt Latos, after coming back from his injury, has pitched quite well as well. I think they're going to have to replace two starters now. They don't really have the depth in Triple-A that they've had in the past. You may get to the point where the Reds decide to make an early call-up of their number one prospect, Robert Stevenson. But I think the main issue with this Reds team, and injuries was a big part of it, but I'm really disappointed that Walt Jocketty didn't make a deal to get another bat. This team craved offense. And Todd Frazier and Billy Hamilton couldn't, and Devin Mesorosco, for that matter, could not carry the load of this team. Jay Bruce has been absolutely anemic this season. Brandon Phillips has been hurt. Votto, I'd be shocked if I see Joey Votto play the rest of the season. Brandon Phillips starts the rehab assignment today in Louisville, so he'll be back probably next week. But the offense in this team is the second worst in Major League Baseball. They actually just lost two straight to one of the teams that's almost as bad, the Boston Red Sox. And they're playing. They're in a stretch of 20 straight games against sub 500 teams. And right now they're I believe 5-9 against those 20 in those 20 games. So they're not winning against poorer opponents, and this is not a team that's heading toward a playoff finish.
Yeah, and I don't want to belabor the point that I've made in the past about this group. They should be better than what they are, but I think they lack on-field leadership. I've felt that now for a couple years. We keep saying it's Jay Bruce's breakout year. We've yet to see it. We have Votto, who has been hurt since the new contract was offered to him, and I don't even think we've started that yet. I think we're coming to a point, Jeff, and I don't mean to get you down in the dumps because I know you love him, and so does Pup Dog Holes. We're getting to a point of no return because they've cash-strapped themselves down the road. These guys need to produce now. It's not too late. It's easy to make it. No, I don't care what anybody says. It's easy to get momentum going here. and make up this deficit. But the problem I have is I think you got to have some on-field leadership. I don't see it.
I don't see it either, and I think that I think Brian Price has done a great job under the circumstances. But you know, offensively, they just can't hit, and this team as a whole doesn't have a very high baseball IQ. They lead the majors in runners picked off the base. They there's a interesting stat called a toot bland, which is a thrown out on the base pass like a nincompoop. There's actually a website called Toot Bland Tracker, and the Reds lead the majors in toot blands on the season. They've had like 26 guys thrown out at the plate in non-force situations. So, you know, they don't run very well. They haven't hit very well. For a team that hasn't hit well and also runs poorly, you're costing yourselves runs. And I think that, you know, I think the offseason for Cincinnati, you've got four guys, Simon, Leak, Latos, and Cueto are all going to be free agents. And I think that your biggest trade chip is going to be Jack Cueto. You might be able to get some talent back with a Latos trade. But Matt Latos' velocity has dropped 3 miles an hour this year, and that could be because he didn't really have a spring training. You know, that there are a lot of questions about Matt Latos' health at this point. So Cueto is the guy that, yes, you want to build your pitching staff around, but he's also the guy that's going to bring you the biggest package in prospects. And I really think that it may be time for the Reds to you know, Walt Jocketty's contract has expires at the end of the season. I think it's time to move on in the front office, and I think it's time to have new leadership in the front office. And I also think it's time to probably dangle Jay Bruce in a trade while he still has some value as a 28-year-old power hitter. He's still a great defensive right fielder. He still has the potential to be a 40-home run guy. He certainly hasn't shown it this year. It may be time to break up this core Reds unit. Because Joey Votto is under contract for another 10 more years. Brandon Phillips is under contract through 2017. You have a lot of guys with big contracts that you're going to have to start jettisoning and bringing up younger prospects. Well, luckily, the Reds do have a pretty good minor league system. They're strong pitching. They're still kind of weak hitting. They do have a couple young hitters, Jesse Winker, Yorman Rodriguez. And Aristides Aquino is a name to watch way, way down the road. But, you know, I think that the Reds definitely have to make some changes, and they sadly did not make those changes. You know, at the All-Star break, when they went in the break, they were a game and a half out of first place. They were riding some momentum, and they are 9-17 since the All-Star break. So, they did not get the bat at the trade deadline that they really needed, that I think it would have sparked this team to a great second half finish. And I think what you're seeing now is as they are limping home, literally and figuratively.
Well, great stuff, Jeff. We're gonna run here. Great stuff on the commissioner. We'll keep a watch on Rob Manfred. We'll see if the Reds can turn around. I know Jay Bruce can get hot overnight and the Reds can go on a run, but we'll see what happens. Great having you on the show, Jeff.
All right, Ken, look forward to seeing you next week. Take care, guys.
All right, we're going to go to break. Folks, I'm not down on the Reds from the standpoint, can they turn this thing around this year? Yeah, there's plenty of time left, but I worry when you don't have an on-field leader. And Jay Bruce can get hot tonight. A couple other guys can put it together. The pitching's been solid, but the Reds just can't get the runs to help out. We'll see what happens. We're going to go to break. When we come back, you may be shocked. Joe may be shocked. But we're going to talk a little Purdue athletics. I got a few things I want to talk about. We'll talk a little Hoosier basketball, Kentucky basketball. Yeah, they're playing. One was up in Canada. The other's down in the Bahamas. Wow, Calipari knows where to go to play some summer hoops. We're going to go to break. Folks, you've been listening, and aren't you lucky, to the Coach K and Joe Show.
This is Tony Uvalar with Uvalar & Sons Chevy Cadillac in Jasper. Right now, Uvalar's has a huge selection of awesome pre-owned vehicles. Cars, trucks, vans, sport utilities, in most all price categories. And they're all priced to sell. Some are certified, and some have special low APRs, but best of all, they are all priced to sell. Uvalar Chevy Cadillac in Jasper, where customers send their friends for great pre-owned vehicles since 1929.
Does your website work for you?
Your website is an employee. You wouldn't continue to pay an employee that didn't do his job, so don't pay for a site that doesn't produce results.
Whether you don't have a site yet or want to improve an existing one, Josh at Idea Fusion Media can help. Want your site to be found easily on search engines like Google? How about growing your business via social media like Facebook? He can help with that as well. Idea Fusion Media, web design that works for you. For your free website review, visit ideafusionmedia.com. That's ideafusionmedia.com.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
This is Cody Zeller, and you're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back to the on the Coach K and Joe Show. Coach, I had to sit here quiet for a while, and I just had a comment or two. About the concussions, I do want to let people know concussions can happen in any sport. They're very careful about those these days. I know football, with the impact there are, they probably have more in that than anything. But, Liz has had 3 concussions on her volleyball team in the last 2 years. So they can happen in other sports as well.
That's true. I mean, I don't have any comment on that. That was just perception of one of our guests, and I want to remind people that our guests were courtesy of the Lantern Road Partners Coaches Line financial partners to grow your business. What else, Joe?
And also, there is a track record for a Purdue hiring an IU person. Mark Hagan was a longtime assistant football coach under Joe Tiller, who I hope to have on very, very soon. It'd be great to have Joe Tiller on. And it turned out good. I know Sharon Versip deal didn't work out very well for IU, but maybe this one will. So,
I don't think it will.
The thing is, IU, back when Sharon Versip was there, their girls' basketball program wasn't very good. Now, We both know that this new coach at IU has some talent. We've seen it, firsthand, what he's got coming up.
I don't think it will. Don't cross those lines. Just shouldn't have done it, Fred Glass. Happy for her, though, because she gets to come to IU, and that would be on top of anybody's list. Hey, Joe, I'm going to talk a little Purdue, and we're going to talk a little Purdue right now. I've done a little work here, and
wow.
Let's start a little bit with their football team. Coach Hazel, and I thought this was pretty neat, Coach Hazel took his team of West Lafayette the other day for practice. They went up to St. Joe College up in Rensselaer, Indiana. Guys didn't know anything about it. They got ready to come in. He said, pack your bags, get the bus. And he had worked out a deal with St. Joe College up in Rensselaer, Indiana, Lake County. He took them on the road, took them up to their practice facilities, which are nothing like a Big Ten school, and pretty much said, listen, guys, you got to be ready to adjust at any moment. Doesn't matter the field you're playing on. Doesn't matter the location. Doesn't matter the weather. You've got to make the mental and physical adjustments. They went up there, and they practiced up at St. Joe College. Now, what's interesting, my dad went to St. Joe College where he played football and basketball, and he used to tell me that when he was there, the Chicago Bears used to come down from Chicago and do their preseason practices in Rensselaer. So Hazel took a page out of the Bears' preseason workout book and went up to Rensselaer, Indiana, gave them a little bit different look. Took them from the big time, small college world's all about. Your thoughts, Joe?
Well, some of the people were like, I get on Golden Black Illustrated, and I know that they were like, why did they do that on the day that the Big Ten Network was there, just for the fact that they, you know, Purdue's got some nice facility to show off, and they weren't able to do that. But I think it's a good thing. I think go out and do that. It's great, you know. And you did mention the Bears, and did you ever see the movie Brian Song?
Many, 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 many times.
About Brian Piccolo and Leo Sayers. That was, you know, that was filmed actually on St. Joe's campus when they were doing the preseason, because that's where they used to have their preseason, was St. Joe's College.
Yeah, absolutely. So I personally think that it was a great move by Coach Hazel, because, listen, Purdue has nowhere to go but up, folks. Nowhere to go but up when it comes to football right now. They had a little press conference the other day, Joe, you may have seen it, where they introduced their new black helmet. The president of the university, Mitch Daniels, former governor, outstanding governor. I don't care whether you're Democrat, Republican, whatever. The facts are the facts. He was an outstanding governor for Indiana during a difficult time economically in this country, and we got through it pretty good. I know, educators, you're a little unhappy about some of the things. I don't blame you, but he had a press conference. President Mitch Daniels was out there, Joe, showing off the new black helmet, trying to at least create a little bit of a stir, a little bit of interest before they get on that field and play on Saturdays.
Yeah, you know, Coach Hazel is a very dynamic coach. He's, you know, the recruits that they're pulling in right now. I mean, I'm not going to say they're five-star recruits, but for being what they were last year, for him to draw some of these kids that he's drawn to the team, you know, for next year, it has to speak about him and his staff. I've heard nothing good things about him and his staff. And you know, the thing that I've always laughed about on Golden Black Illustrated, I'm now a reader, not a poster of it, because I don't post. Because quite honestly, if you're on Golden Black right now, I can honestly tell you it's not what it used to be. Too many crybabies there. And you know, the funny thing was last year there were a lot of people that were already calling for his head. And, you know, it was just utterly ridiculous just for the fact that he's going to try to do things his way. And he had some people that fought him. He had some older players that fought him that are no longer with the program. And, you know, sometimes you got to do a house cleaning. And that's what he did. And he's getting people that are going to buy into what he wants to do. And if you don't want to buy into that, you know, there's the door.
I have never, as a coach and as a fan, and maybe it's because I've coached, I've never had a problem with a first-year coach who comes into a tough situation, talent-wise, the past few years-wise, with struggling his first year. I've never had a problem with that. I saw Lou Holtz do it at Notre Dame and South Carolina and saw the results. I think that first year is exactly what you're saying, Joe. You change the mentality. You find out who's with you and who wants to stay in their old ways. You make some moves, you clean up a little bit, you clean the house, and then you start focusing on your little successes, and you promote them. You promote them. You change things up. You give these guys a different look. You make them take them back to their roots. You change things around, and then you watch the progress the next 2, 3, and year 4. That's what you're looking for. And Coach Hazel, I think, is trying to get those things done. And you know what? If I was at Purdue, based on what I've seen the last decade, I think I'd be all in and say, I'm going for this guy 110%. Let's see where we go by year 3. And so I like what I'm seeing. I like that he's celebrating little things, finding little ways to keep Purdue on the map. Let's jump over to Purdue basketball, Joe. And I know you've had your thoughts on Purdue basketball. They've had a couple of positive recruiting situations, and they have another one possibly in the fold. Jalen Brunson, a top point guard in the country for 2015, has set an official visit to Purdue. He is also visiting Illinois and Michigan State, among a few others. He's a son of former Bulls player Rick Brunson. They already have Ryan Klein, Grant Weatherford, and they also have a young man that I saw at the Super Showcase AAU tournament down in Louisville. He's going to visit them as well. He wants to be a biochemist. He obviously has come to the United States from another country if he wants to be a biochemist. His name is Taco Falls. He is 7'5", 7'5", and he wants to be a biochemist. He came to the United States. He's in Florida from Senegal. And Purdue, with Vanderbilt, a few other schools, Florida is one of them, is among his final eight choices. And I think the fact that he wants to be a biochemist, that Purdue in that situation, they've already got the big man, they got a 7'2" kid that's coming in this year. I think that that Coach Painter and his staff are out there working it, beating it, because they know great coaching only is great on the court if you've got some pretty solid players to go with it.
Well, you know, the Brunson, he's also visiting Villanova and Temple. He's originally from Philadelphia and then moved to Illinois. And so he's he is going to go look at those two schools as well. Another five-star recruit that says he, when he sets his visits, definitely is Purdue's going to be there, going to be one of them, is Caleb Swanigan out of Fort Wayne. He's also going to go. So, you know, just to get the visits from that caliber of player says that something's, you know, something's right. And, you know, it's my opinion. I'm on the outside looking in, but I totally feel like maybe the loss of Ronnie Johnson will be a an addition by subtraction situation.
Oh, I agree with you. And speaking of Johnsons, Tyrone Johnson, former Boiler, is going to be playing professional basketball in Greece.
Yes, he is.
What do you think of that, Joe? What do you think
of
that?
Yeah, I knew that he was. Well, I don't have a problem with Tyrone, other than his floating his floaters in the lane.
I was hoping that you would be, because you think that I never want to talk about Purdue, and listeners give me a little grief for that, I thought you'd be impressed with all this Purdue information that I've been gathering.
Well, I can't lie that I am totally impressed with you, Coach. I mean, you're spanning the globe, and you're even going to places that people never thought you'd go. So, you know.
Spanning the globe. I used to love the wide world of sports. Wasn't that great? Spanning the globe.
Yep.
Oh, that's awesome. Folks, on the outside, Joe mentioned the outside looking in. You're on the outside looking in. If you are not participating in the stock market, and financial advisors, Edward Jones, Janet Schulteis, she can help you. I'm telling you, she's done it for a lot of people. The Edward Jones way works. It has for decades. It perpetuates, creates, lengthens, and gives you a plan for your retirement, to stay retired, to get retired, or just to grow that nest egg so you can do what you want to do and maybe span the globe for sports all over the place, or even go to West Lafayette to watch Purdue. Give her a call, Janet Schulteis, Edward Jones, 812-479-8215. Doesn't matter where you're at. She can work with you. She does. She works with clients all over the country. Edward Jones has the plan. They have the way to do it. Give her a call. Her and Beth, they'll get together and work with you. Joe IU played some basketball up in Canada. Kentucky played some basketball down in the Bahamas. Kentucky still has a swing in the Bahamas. Of course, Kentucky always has the money, and Calipari always has the means to take these guys everywhere. But both teams, Joe, both teams looked pretty good. IU went 4-1 up in Canada. I think they lost either their first or second game out. But I'll tell you somebody who looks good, Joe, James Blackman Jr., one-time recruit of Kentucky. He looks really good. Now, I think things will change when you get into the Big Ten and the defense locks down, but he's got a lot of confidence in his shot. He's a brash young man. He's confident in himself. Yogi Ferrell, Blackman, Devin Davis, Troy Williams, they all look good for the Hoosiers, 4-1 in Canada, Joe.
Yeah, I didn't really follow that the IU trip. I do know they went 4-1, and I know Blackman did. You know, we probably knew he was the real deal anyway. So he's going to be a good player for them. They needed that type player, and they've got it.
Interesting note, if you did not know this, folks, Hanner Perea could not accompany the team. It seems that there were visa issues, and he was not able to make it across the border. You know, it's almost an afterthought about being in the United States and being able to go across the Canadian border. There are some issues you have to deal with, insurance and those types of things, but it almost seems so seamless. But Indiana could not take Hanner across, and there were some specific reasons for that, but we're not going to get into it. On the other end of the continent, we head down in Kentucky. Coach Cal's group went 3-0 in their first set of games. I think it was in Puerto Rico, and now they're playing a few games in the Bahamas. Joe, this Kentucky juggernaut, 9 McDonald All-Americans. Listen, folks, listen to what I just said. 9 McDonald All-Americans. Those guys didn't all go to the NBA after last year's runner-up finish to Connecticut. Joe, this Kentucky team, it's considered a top-5 team. If the guard plays improved and the post play comes along, they have got to be, for sure, not just one of the teams for the national championship, teams for the national championship.
Yeah, I mean, they've got that firepower where they can bring in all those All-Americans. And, you know, what's interesting about that is, you know, sometimes people just want to be a part of a successful program. And, you know, 9, which there's only 5 guys on the court at the same time, you know, there aren't many teams in America that have 4 of them. They've got 4 sitting on the bench, at least at all times.
Joe, you actually make a good point. And in this time, this era of selfishness and me first, it is interesting, your point, that these young men, some of them know that they may not necessarily start right away. Some of them know they may have to develop a little bit, but they want to be a part of success. And success breeds success, usually, as long as it stays disciplined and organized. With Kentucky and the new rules on stipends and things, we'll have to see how that goes, because we know what went on in Kentucky during the 70s, parts of the 80s. It got pretty shady down there with the $100 handshakes, and we know of a person and persons that participated in those $100 handshakes. So you make a great point, though. Sometimes a young man can check his ego a little bit and say, I want to be a part of success, because the opportunity to be on the stage of success, listen to what I'm saying, folks, the opportunity to be on the stage of success can open doors for your future successes, whether it be on the basketball court or off the basketball court. So, Joe, very good point. Well made.
I have one every once in a while, so, you know, what do they say, a blind squirrel finds a nut every once in a while as well, you know, something like that.
Joe, as we get towards the end of the show, Paul George, Pacers came out, Larry Bird, Paul George will not be able to play the entire upcoming season. Before Paul George's injury, the Pacer season tickets renewal was already at 90%. There was an article in the Indianapolis Star that talked a little bit about the Pacers and the ticket sales and things like that. They were brisk. What's going to happen with attendance, blah, blah, blah. I think one good thing for the Pacers is Chicago's got Rose back and Cleveland's got LeBron back. Division, much more interesting. So even if you're not going out to see a great Pacer team or to watch Paul George, PG-13, when he comes back, you are going to see some pretty good basketball players and teams within the division now, which can help attendance. But Joe, just you're the casual fan, the common fan. How do you view attendance? A city like Indianapolis got over 1 million people in it. It's not a little bitty city with a pro sports team. It's a big city with a pro sports team. Do you think attendance will dip that much without Paul George and a really competitive Pacer team this year, if, in fact, they are not competitive?
Yeah, they're going to have to be competitive, first of all, for it to happen. So if they're not competitive, I see that the attendance will dwindle. I mean, you know, the odds of them competing. I mean, let me ask you a question before I answer the question. How competitive do you think they'll be?
I don't know that they can put enough points up on the board. I think they struggled with Paul George to put points up on the board. They are talking about potential trading Hibbert. I don't know what Larry Bird and the crew is going to do. But one of the things that worries me, Joe, I think they'll play hard. I think they'll play defense. I think they'll try to do things offensively. I just don't know if they have the personnel without Paul George, which they already struggled at times, to put the points up on the board they're going to need to put on the board. Some people have them in the lower eight playoffs. Some people have them not making the playoffs, you know, people that follow the NBA. Right now, I'm going to tell you that I don't think they'll make the playoffs. I hope I'm wrong. I know Slick Leonard hopes I'm wrong, and he's the perfect guy to ask about. We got to get the Hall of Famer. He just went through the Hall of Fame inductions, Naismith Hall of Fame inductions. We got to get the Hall of Famer back on here soon to give us his take on where he thinks the Pacers are going to be. What do you think?
I just don't know much about the Pacers now. I mean, I really don't have an opinion because, you know, with losing Stevenson and et cetera, I don't know. I mean, and here I am saying I don't know all over and over again, but I'm just at a loss of words for the Pacers right now.
Yeah, I think it's a big dilemma. We'll see what happens. Folks, don't forget, the NFL's gearing up. Denver looks solid. They've improved their defense. Peyton Manning, we'll be talking NFL on future shows. Seattle, some people think they can repeat. I just think it's too hard to repeat in the NFL. I don't think they will. We'll see who else comes up. Obviously, New England's always in the hunt. Joe, before we end this show, big thing going on is now the Ice Bucket Challenge for ALS. Tons of people have been doing it. Do you think that's something you and I will do?
If we ever are together, we can do it at the same time. I'm sure Janet Schulteis or Liz Milligan would love to videotape that.
Well, I think the Ice Bucket Challenge and a call out for some people. I was waiting to see if we got called out, but we haven't as of yet. But it's a great cause. Folks, have some fun with it and get people involved in fighting. You know, we have so many bad diseases in this that people have to deal with. ALS is just horrible. It just robs you of everything. Of course, others of you might know it from a sports standpoint as Lou Gehrig's disease. It took one great baseball player too early. Joe, we're down to about a minute or so left. I want to thank our guest, Don Schulteis, of course, indie contributor, who's hot, who's not. The ever volatile Kurt Guxell, love when he's on, WBDC sports director, voice of the Southridge Raiders, and Jeff Cochran, our MLB Cincinnati Red contributor. Big weekend. High school football scrimmages get started. Although it doesn't count on your schedule, it is a chance for the kids to get in a little adrenaline rush, kind of get jacked up, Joe.
Hey, Coach, I wanted to tell you something real fast before the show ends. I talked to Phil Schmidt today, and he was talking about E.J. Eads, and he said he's going to try to get on the show. He led the Jets in tackles last week, and he's playing at the Cincinnati Bengals on Saturday, and he's going to talk to him to try to hook us up with him once again.
Yeah, that's awesome. I knew that he was back out trying to get it done. I talked to his uncle Gene Schmidt a few weeks ago, and he said he was out there trying to get it back going again, so that's awesome. Take us home, Joe.
Okay, well, as always, I'll invite you because there are scrimmages tonight and also next week. I know that other sports, soccer, volleyball, there are a lot of sports that start. You know, and for the value that you have to pay, you get a great entertainment. So for Coach K, I'm Joe saying we'll see you next week on the Coach K and Joe Show.
The following presentation of the Coach K and Joe Show was brought to you by Idea Fusion Media. Ubelar & Sons of Jasper and Vincennes.
Harmon Dental Care, and by Jasper Today.
See you next week.